though a bit disappointing, it was still a lot of fun. And Herod's mind towards Pilate probably would have looked at him as, you know, and there's a lot of subtlety there, you know, respecting his authority over Galilee. And all those things would have gone some way to creating a feeling of mutual understanding. Verse 13, "And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers of the people, said unto them, Ye have brought this man unto me, as one that perverteth the people. And behold, I, having examined him before you, have found no fault in this man, touching those things whereof ye accuse him. No, nor yet Herod, for I sent you to him, and lo, nothing worthy of death is done in him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For of necessity he must release one unto them at the feast." At least that was the custom. And obviously when you break with custom, and that could be a big problem. You know, the releasing of one prisoner at the feast was something they looked for. Every concession the Romans gave them, they would want to hold on to. You know, that whole authority of the Romans also would have added to his amusement. Now they're the king of the Jews, the Messiah that they've been longing for. They claim one comes, claiming to be him, and they don't receive him. To him, that's got to be humorous. And now they come to him, the authority they despise, to dispose of the one who is supposed to be their great leader. And of course, he doesn't believe any of this. Every governor has people around him who know things. Soldiers, provincial governors, lesser administrators would be able to tell him something. Even his wife, who we know from other gospels, told him to have nothing to do with him. With Christ, that is. His intention is to chastise him and release him. I'm going to punish him with some sort of corporal punishment and let him go. But they all at once cry, "Away with this man and release him to us, Barabbas." The fact that they cried it all at once means they prepared. They knew. And that's why I say, you know, the crowd that was there was a select group because they knew what was happening. I mean, how often do you hang around the courthouse waiting for a judgment? But when it's a particular person at a particular time, all of a sudden the courtroom is packed because they announce it. Well, this was not announced. This was done in the dead of night. So it was kind of accusers only in this group. And their voices are going to prevail. Maybe a few other people have trickled in. People who might be interested in Christ's redemption. You know, there was, in the Sanhedrin, there was Nicodemus, and there was also Joseph of Arimathea, and they would not be consenting, but their voices aren't going to prevail among such a multitude. And there's a significant number of people here who are set to put Jesus to death, and they're all in agreement together. And that's why it just overwhelms Pilate, because the group that is there is so slanted in one direction. But that, you know, that's the politics. That's a lot of politics. You know, when you get your group together, a few people in one place at one time can make such a big difference. You know, when they have these big protest marches, there's a lot of people there, but really it's a very small percentage of the population. You know, you get 100,000 people in one place and people are like, wow. But it's really, in a nation of 600 million plus, it's a drop in the bucket. It's less than a tenth of a percent. So they asked for Barabbas. Verse 19, "For certain sedition made in the city and for murder was cast into prison." He was a murderer and had engaged in sedition, insurrection, had tried to lead a revolt. It's funny, they want someone released whose crime is the thing they accuse Jesus of. They're accusing him of stirring up the people. Now, the kind of stirring up Jesus is doing is, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you tithe of mint and anise and cumin, but have neglected the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith." He's stirring up the people against the religious leaders and against them spiritually, and they're afraid of their position. Saying, "Oh, we're afraid the Romans are going to come." No, no, no. They're afraid that he's actually going to win the hearts and minds of the people. Barabbas actually does what they accuse Jesus of. He's actually stirring up the people in a way the Romans are interested in. The Romans aren't interested in the petty conflicts between Jew and Jew over their religious matters. Except that they're making a stir about it, and they've obviously planned this out. They've stacked the deck so that when they come before Pilate, they have an overwhelming majority. They catch him at a time early in the morning, you know, when all this is very, you know, you catch someone, you get them out of bed early in the morning and you start throwing things at them, especially if they're not a morning person, people can make mistakes. Not that Pilate's making a mistake, or that he would see it that way. If God hadn't hidden the wisdom from him, he never would have crucified Christ. Verse 20, Pilate, therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And he said unto them the third time, "Why? What evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." And they were instant with loud voices. Then was they were immediately ready and urgent to speak, requiring that he be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. There may have been a few voices, but the prevailing opinion in that group was crucify him. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired. But he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrenian, coming out of the country, and on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. Jesus is given up to be crucified, given over to their will. And the question throughout history is, you know, who crucified Christ? The Jews crucified Christ. The Romans crucified Christ. I've even heard people say, "We've crucified Christ because he was wounded for our transgression. He was bruised for our iniquities." And someone else said he was smitten of God and afflicted. Well, that's how people saw him. But in Christ's own words, I'd rather judge the matter. Who's responsible for Jesus Christ's death? The Gospel of John, chapter 10, verse 17. "Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father." Jesus Christ had the power to take his life, or to lay his life down, or to take it back. And he did both. That's why he prayed not to enter into temptation, because it was in his power to lay his life down or to not lay his life down. He submitted to death by his own choice.